Hi everybody, Hanukkah Sameach. Wow.
Hanukkah Sameach.
I can't, there is nothing more pleasurable than to be sitting in my own living room in our new home and to be celebrating Hanukkah with all of you, so many of you who know so well over the last few months and spending time with certainly every week, often even every day, and especially those who've been regulars at these shiurim. What a special way to be finishing off, and in certain parts of Jewish thought, those who learnt Reputna this week, Hanukkah is seen as the origin of Torah Shabbat Al Peh, of the oral law. So it feels wonderful to have so many people for what will hopefully be a great shiur tonight on Hanukkah. So I always struggled as an educator with trying to find things to speak about on Hanukkah. Hanukkah doesn't have its own masechet, its own tractate in the Gemara, unlike, say, Purim or Yom Kippur or other maybe one-day festivals that have got a whole tractate for themselves. Hanukkah doesn't have one. There's also no book of the Bible. Sefer HaMakkabim, the Book of Maccabees, didn't make it into the Bible, so it's a struggle. So this is one of my favourite pieces that I've developed over the years. What we're going to focus on is a piece from Tehillim, from Psalms, one of the Mizmorim. It's Mizmor Lamed, number 30. Here's a piece from Masechtot Ketanot, Masechet Sofrim. It's not part of the, which isn't part of the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud. It's one of the what's called the Minor Masechtot. The material is very old, but it was edited around the period of the Gaonim. Three words. B'Chanukah Arumimcha Hashem. On Chanukah, we say this psalm, Arumimcha Hashem. Slightly later, 12th century France, there's a work called the Sidur Trois. I don't know if you work on your French accent. Trois. Who lived in Trois? Rashi, right? That's probably a good guess on Troyes, right? Rashi lived in Troyes, also pronounced as Trois. And this Sidur is associated with his Bet Midrash. And it's a Sidur not in the way in which we have it of these are the prayers that you say. It also contains lots of Minhagim. Here's one thing that it says. Be'eretz ha'ai. I was going to ask if anybody knows what Eretz ha'ai is. Yeah, I put it in the translation. Anybody knew before they read the translation what Eretz ha'ai is? The land of the island. That's the way in which, for hundreds of years in Jewish texts, England, Britain, was referred to. It doesn't come up very often, but when it does come up, it's interesting. Rabbeinu Asher, the Rosh in the Middle Ages, records that there are prohibitions, obviously, on yayin akum, on Gentile wine. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, what about mashke akum, just non-Jewish alcohols which aren't wine, and such as beer and the like. He says, oh no, there's not a specific prohibition. So the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, living in Spain, writes that he's heard the Be'eretz Ha'ai, in the land of the island in Britain, Kol Gedolei Eretz Ha'ai, frequently drink beer in all of the Gentile establishments. So it's nice to know that hundreds of years ago, my predecessors from the UK were happily drinking beer. Here's another case of Eretz Ha'ai. Eretz Ha'ai, in the land of the island, says the Sidur Trois, in Britain, Nohagim Lomar B'Chanukah, the minhag, the practice is to say on Chanukah, Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit, the song of the dedication of the temple, in other words, Mizmor Lamed, Arumimcha Hashem, B'Makom Shir Mizmor, in place of the regular daily. So here is this Mizmor, which is somehow associated with Chanukah. So why do we read it on Hanukkah? So the simplest answer is, well, the word Hanukkah appears in the first line, right? Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit LeDavid. 500-600 years before the actual historical event of Hanukkah, David wrote a psalm which has the word Hanukkah in it about the dedication of the temple, and so that's why we say it. What I'm going to try and claim tonight is that there is actually something when we read this more carefully, when we read it with real nuance, I think there's something much deeper, something much more profound that is going to connect this up, this Mizmor Tehillim, up to the festival of Hanukkah, rather than simply the appearance of the word Hanukkah in it. Okay? So let's begin. In fact, before we begin reading it, two quick notes about Sefer Tehillim. Okay? Notes which are true for Sefer Tehillim as a whole, and which will be specifically relevant for reading this. Here's the first one. My teacher, who Some of you may have heard me mention a number of times, Dr. Yael Ziegler, a really wonderful teacher of mine. She, when I took a course with her a number of years ago on Tehillim, she introduced it like this. Tehillim is the opposite of the rest of Tanakh. Tehillim is the opposite, Psalms is the opposite of every single other book in the Bible. How so? If the Tanakh as a whole is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God speaking to man, whether it be through halacha, or through prophecy, or through the stories, Sefer Tehillim, the book of Psalms, is man speaking to God. Tanakh as a whole is God speaking to man. Sefer Tehillim is man speaking to God. It is David, or it is any other individual who authored one of the Tehillim, opening up their heart, speaking about their emotions, where they are, and turning to God. It's extremely raw. It's extremely there. Often, if you're reading it as a modern person, we might find it hard to be as explicit as that. That's point number one. It's not God speaking to man, it's man speaking to God. Point number two is that it's very rare for us to have any background, whether it's historical background or some other sort of background, to any of the particular Mizmorim. Some of them have some sort of like little introduction, like David after the sin of Bathsheba or whatever, but for the most part they're completely blank, and they're sort of described in just very general terms. Like a person might be saying, you know, my enemies pursue me, or, you know, I soak my couch every night with my tears, right? But you don't ever have anything of the background to what brought the person to that situation. Anyone want to suggest a reason why that might be, why they're written in such generalized terms? No? Spot on, right? Were they to be written in a way in which they describe the specific scenario, somebody, I don't know, split up with their partner or lost a child or whatever it is, and that's what got them to such a situation, then that would sort of limit the applicability of the Mizmor and the way in which one could, you know, would only be in such a situation. By having them in such generalized terms, they're applicable to anybody wherever they are, right? So those two reasons, those two notes, that to him is man speaking to God, number one, number two, that they are written in general ways, I think must be the reason why Tehillim has this sort of unique place within just Jewish thought as a whole and Jewish life, that we use Sefer Tehillim as a resource, as something to turn to at moments of great joy, at moments of great sadness, at moments of danger, whatever it is. So those two points are true in general, and they'll be true for this. Let's begin to read. I've got my own reading of this, but if you've got anything you want to throw in, please do. One introductory verse, which is sort of separate from the rest of it, Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit LeDavid. Now we get to the heart of it. The first section, I think, goes from Pasuk Bet to Pasuk Dalet, verse 2 to 4. We'll see why. Aromimcha Hashem, I will praise you, God. Ki dilitani, because you have raised me up. Okay, let's be a bit more particular about the words. What's aromimcha? It's not just I will praise you. I haven't got a precise translation, but what word is in there? Romem, which means?
Glory.
It does mean glory, but specifically?
Exalted.
The heights, right? Le marom, right? Bimromav, in the heights. Right? I will praise you to the heavens. Ki dilitani. Anyone know what a dili is?
A bucket.
A bucket, right? A dili you pull water out of the well with. Ki dilitani. You have pulled me up, you've raised me up like water that comes out of a well. Lo simacht oivayli, and my enemies haven't rejoiced over me. Hashem Elokai, Lord my God, Shivati Elecha, I cried out to you, v'tirpa'eini, and you healed me. Hashem He'elita min Sha'ol Nafshi, you lifted me out of Sheol. Anyone got a translation for the word Sheol?
The nether.
So often translated as like the underworld, right? Could mean the grave, but some dark place. It means Sha'ol Nafshi, the nether world of my soul. Hayitani, you gave me life, mi yardei vor, from those that go down to the pit. Somebody want to just sum up the theme of these verses? What situation is this person in, or have they been in?
The dark one.
The dark one. Rachel?
Even though he was going through all of his hardship, he was still able to recognize God. So it's like kind of, maybe we say this specific right before Baruch Shamar, correct?
I'm disappointed in you, Rachel.
No.
It's before Baruch Shamar for
before
Ashkenazim, but for proud Moroccan, for proud Moroccans such as yourself, it shouldn't be before Baruch Shamar.
maybe it's like right before you, it's like no matter what you're going through, you could be in the lowest of lows, you still are capable of davening to Hashem, and you're still able to recognize.
That's very beautiful. To be more specific, I'm not sure if the person recognized God in the darkness. They seem to have emerged from the darkness, right? They're post it, right? Darkness is one word. The other word that I add here is lowness, right? There's all these words of having been down. I will praise you to the heights, God, because you lifted me up. Dilitani, he'elita, you raised me up. This person was in a bad place, a negative place, a dark place, a low place. What was it? Physical illness? Was it mental illness? We don't know. We're not given those details. But this person's situation has been turned around. They're now somewhere much better. And as Rachel said, they recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role, God's role, in having turned that around. And they're praising God on account of that. We don't know how they got so low. We don't know what caused that fall, right? It's going to be something we're going to be trying to look out for within this. Any other thoughts at this stage? So I said that's the first section. How do I know it's the first section? Because who's speaking to who? It's the individual writing this, speaking to Hashem. Avo Mimcha, I will praise you. Now, Pasuk Hey and Vav, verses 5 and 6, we have a switch because we're no longer speaking to God, rather the composer of it is speaking to those around him. He says, I've had this experience, you should learn from it. Zamru la Hashem chasidav. His pious ones, sing his praises. You should do this. V'hodu l'zecha kodsho, give thanks to his holy name. Ki, erega ba'apo, his anger may last a moment. Chayim b'iltzono, but his favor is for a lifetime. And here is just one of my favorite lines. Sefer Tehillim can sometimes just give just astonishing lines, which you know you just take with you and like use yourself to think certain things. This is one that I keep with me. The erev yalin bechi, in the evening, in the night time, you lie down in tears. A day can just end and you're broken and you're full of despair. And the morning you rise up in joy. Right? I mean, I personally, I love this line because I find it very powerful. Like, I've had that, right? There are days when you just go to bed like, and the world is terrible. And the next morning, that's been my experience, says this individual, Hasidav, everyone else, learn from this, right?
But is it not talking about, it's talking about the person, or it's talking about God?
God causes the person to rise up in joy, I think, but I think that you're saying it's God who lies down the Bechi?
Only because of the English translation, which capitalizes
it. Ah, interesting. So, I think we've got something very interesting in Tehillim and also in a lot of Navi is something called, it's a very clunky phrase in English, biblical parallelism. What that means is that a pasuk, a verse, divides into two, right? You've always got two parts of a verse where the second half says something very similar to the first half. So you can see that throughout this, right? So just in that one, it's Ki rega ba'apo chayim b'iltzono, a moment of his anger, a lifetime in his will. End of part one. Part two, Be'erev Yalim Bechi, in the morning one lies, in the evening one lies down in tears. So part one is speaking about God's anger and God's will, but part two is speaking about the human individual, I think. I've had this experience, I want others to learn from it. We've still got no idea, though, as to how this person, this individual, arrived at this situation. Right? What caused them to be low? What took them there, Jackie?
Well, I just noticed in the second pasuk there's simach yoyvai li, so I mean it's making reference.
But lo simach da yoyvai
li. Sorry, yeah, it's making reference though to a third party. Meaning, you mentioned before it could be an internal struggle, it could be emotional, it could be mental, whatever it is. But I mean, he's making like explicit reference to there being an external force that causes loneliness.
So here's something very interesting with Sefer Tehillim as a whole. Anybody like familiar with Sefer Tehillim, like say it regularly, or familiar with the range of them? The Oyvim are everywhere. right? The enemies are always there, right? At places where you don't expect them, right? You know, in Asherah, they pop up towards the end. David had a lot of enemies. Maybe that's a part of it. I wonder where the centrality of the enemies. I'm really not sure if they are external or internal. Some of you, those who were here for the very first Think of the Year, which we did here, you'll know my love for Israeli music, and a lot of the best Israeli artists will take these sorts of verses and then just tweak them, right? Just do one little change which really gets something. So a verse somewhere else in Tehillim is Et oivai li, et halech itam kol yamei chayai ve'asigam. All my life I'll be battling my enemies, and in the end I will succeed against them. What's this phrase? My favourite Israeli artist, Erez Levari, quotes that exact verse, then just switches the last phrase, being not I won't defeat them, but they will be there with me, as in carry on as part of me. I don't know what the enemies are, right? So it could be some external force, like you're saying, but it could also equally be an internal enemy, being our own enemies. I think everything changes in the next verse. I think the key to understanding this whole mizmor is to understand Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Three things are going to happen. Three ways in which I'm going to know that this is a special, a unique verse. Va'ani amalti b'shalvi, bal emot olam. I said in my tranquility, my shalva, I shall never fall. Anybody notice anything about this verse? Before you explain the verse, is there anything that just sort of jumps out at you if you're reading it sensitively? Ah, okay, that's what tranquility is. Nice. Anything just jump out about the verse itself? Elisa?
Also, before it's mostly talking about God, he's talking about, from
an about who's he speaking about? As in, who's the person? It's not him speaking to someone else, it's speaking
himself.
And what's the word he uses?
Ani.
Why Ani? Why is Ani screaming out? Why should I notice the Ani? Exactly, right? Those of you who are familiar with the basics of Hebrew grammar, you often don't need to say the word ani, right? If I'm speaking in the future tense, I just put an aleph at the beginning of a word, right? Elech, et palel, et echol. I will do this. I assimilate myself into the verb. We've already seen this, right? Again? Right, that's in the past tense. Shivati is to, I cried out to you. What's the very first word of it? Aromimcha, right? The person is a part of the verb. Va'ani screams out at me. Right? He is now separate from the verb. Va'ani amalti. Hold that point. So the va'ani is the one thing. I know this verse is special. Number two, where is this verse in the Mizmor?
No.
Bang in the middle. Number three, I mentioned to Tamar's point that most biblical poetry is written in halves. Right? Biblical parallelism. Right? I'll praise you, God, because you raised me up. And my enemies didn't rejoice. One, two. Hashem Elokai Shivati Elecha. Lord my God, I cried out to you. Latilpa'eni, and you healed me, right? They balance one another. This verse, in the center, breaks the rhythm. Va'ani amalti b'shalvi, bal emot olam. And I said in my tranquility, I shall never fall. Put all of these points together, right? What's at the heart of this verse? Va'ani. You want to say that? Myself. The individual, completely alone, unique, in my tranquility. Very interesting word, tranquility. Shalva. Anybody got anything about shalva? Something from possibly this week's parasha, just gone? V'yeshev Yaakov be'eretz mugurei aviv. Yaakov dwelled in the land of his forefathers' wanderings. Rashi quotes a Midrashic tradition. So I find it very difficult, Midrash. But the Midrash is as follows. Right? This is just before Yosef is sold. Bikesh Yaakov lashevet b'shalva. Yaakov desired to rest in tranquility. A difficult life on the road, being his brother, cheated by his father-in-law, the jealousy and the rivalry of his wives, the episode with Dina. Finally, he wants just to dwell Lapentia, right, retire somewhat. He wants to relax. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, continues the Midrash, God says, the tzadikim yesh olam haba, the righteous have the world to come, v'atam v'akesh gam olam hazeh, and you want this world as well? Such a difficult Midrash. I find it painful, right? But this idea, like, you don't rest in this world. So the word shalva, you know, we all want to be in shalva, and shalva is the name of a wonderful charity in Israel, and, like, you know, shalva we think of as a positive thing. In the Tanakh and in Chazal, it's a problematic thing, right? Ani amalti b'shalva, I said in my tranquility, I, me alone, bal emot olam, I shall never fall. I said, I am at the center of the world. I was so confident in my abilities, so confident that I did not need anyone's help, not any other human's help, not God's help. I said I would never fall. And then what happened? I fell. I crashed. I burned. Very good, complacency, what the Greeks call hubris, right, a pride, which is then, you know, inevitably followed by a fall. Yeah, I think that's correct. And I fell, I crashed. Jake?
Just to back you up a little bit, I asked it, but Tuskegee also, Alephet and Aleph. I mean, Amarti Vishlavi, Balamot, not the first and last word.
Yeah, Fermot, very, very good. Nice. I fell, I crashed. And then I was able to return. I was able to be brought back. Why? God. Hashem, Birtzoncha, through you, through your will, He'emadata Lahareoz, you raised me up to the heights. And now I don't see myself as alone and unique and only the author of my own destiny. I see it with you. It happened with Ritzoncha. Histarta panecha, if you hide your face, Haiti Nipal, I'm confounded. Notice a number of things, right? The rhythm has now returned, right? We're now back in two parts. We had the break, and now we're back to two parts. The next verse, Eilecha Hashem Ekra, to you, God, I cry out. What do I notice grammatically? The ani has returned to the verb, right? Not Eilecha ani kore, Eilecha Ekra, right? You get the nuance of this, the coolness of this? Va'ani stood out because he saw himself as not requiring anything else. The eye was in the center. Now that he has a greater humility, a greater sensitivity to the fact that whatever he does have is on account of God, then the ani no longer sticks out. It's now part of the verb. Ve'el Hashem et Chanan, and to you, God, will I supplicate. David?
Yeah, that seems like, I guess, like mostly like he's on like an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
Bottom, and now he's sort of all of a sudden in this tranquil state, and now he's sort of realized that, and he's like, oh, there's still a high power that I need to.
And the difference between his original state where he was high,
right,
and his new state where he's returned is that he now no longer sees himself as solely, as completely self-dependent, complacent, to use Jackie's word. But you've returned me to even, you know, great heights. You've brought me back to. This now affects how I see my role in the world, my reason for being alive. My betza badami, what purpose does my blood serve? Literally, my life. Birideti al shachat, if I'm down in the grave, if I'm not alive. Hayodacha afar, will the dust proclaim you? Hayagi damitecha, will it tell your truth? Shema Hashem v'chaneni, listen to my voice and be gracious to me. Hashem haya ozer li, you are my helper. Hafachta misbedi, you turned my lament into my healing. Pitachta saki, you took off my sackcloth, my garments of mourning. Ta'azreini simcha, you clothed me in gladness. Laman yizamercha v'lo yedom. Adonai Elohai le'olam adecha. You've done this that I can sing your praise. To you I will forever give thanks. The story of a person thanking God for having been somewhere very low, having their life turned around, of having returned, realizing the reason that they fell was on account of their own complacency, of their own belief that they could be sufficient. That's the reason that they fell. And on their return, they understand that whatever it is they have God to thank for it. Anybody want to try and be a bit creative and link up this now much more nuanced theme with Hanukkah? hold off on that. Hanukkah?
That idea of Be'erev yelling back over the Book Arena, I just thought maybe that has to do with lighting the menorah and thinking that at night it wasn't going to last until the morning, and then seeing in the morning that when you lighted it, it was still there.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I hadn't thought of that.
Well, you mentioned just before, it was the Greeks, right? It was the term hubris. And so they were exactly the people we were fighting against this mentality of being like your own god almost, and worshiping yourself and your culture
right.
more than any higher being.
Right.
So if we're fighting, if those are the people we're fighting against.
Interesting.
So then they're like
associated with
yeah.
with that. I thought, what are the two miracles or the two motifs of Hanukkah?
The war and the oil.
The war and the oil, right? The war, the physical victory is the one that appears in Sefer HaMakabim and the Book of Maccabees. The mention of the oil is not there at all. Fast forward 150 years, 200 years to Chazal, the sages of the Talmud. There is no mention whatsoever of the military victory. The whole miracle is placed, the whole emphasis is placed on Nes Pach HaShemen, on the miracle of the oil. Why the move? Why the transition? Why does Chazal want to put the focus on the oil?
Instead of like us, physically fighting, it's more of a goblin.
Right, and it might not be to negate, to go against the military victory, but I think certainly to place it in a certain context. The focus on the military victory easily leads to a position like the Pasuk in Bamidbar, Kochi v'otzem yadi asali, my own strength, the power of my hand, has achieved this. I have brought this about. The idea of the miracle of the oil says both the military victory is actually should be seen through the image of the oil, that it came about because of God. Here's the very danger encaptured in this, ascribing to ourselves the reasons for our own success and leaving Hashem out in the picture. That, I think, that's my way of seeing its connection to Hanukkah specifically. But as Jake sort of began to intimate, I think that actually this Mizmor is a very clear, explicit reference and commentary on another biblical story. Sometimes you get this, where the Mizmor is a comment directly on a certain story of Tanakh. It acts almost as like an internal Perush, right? Often we have Rashi or Rambam to tell us what to make of a certain story. Sometimes somewhere else in the Tanakh can be a commentary on another place in the Tanakh. For those of you who didn't hear what Jake said, can anybody guess it?
Sorry.
Anybody guess which story is our Mizmor speaking about?
Yosef.
I think it's clearly Yosef, and I do not understand. I'm so surprised, and I say this with humility, I don't understand how this has never been said before. I've using the Bar Ilan program, I can see everything that has ever been said about this Mizmor. Nobody, not Rashi, no medieval commentary, nothing in Chazal has ever said this Mizmor is speaking about Yosef. It is so clearly speaking about Yosef. How do I know it's speaking about Yosef? So, David, you said just now? Or Noah said?
Yeah.
The pit. Chaitani miyalde vol. The pit. Pit, ultimate symbol of Yosef, right? Yosef thrown into the pit by his brothers, raised up from the pit. Then when he gets to Mitzrayim, Potiphar, where is he thrown into? Jail, specifically? The pit, right? And then Paro pulls him out of the pit. Okay, that's one. Anything else? What specifically is your connection?
Well, to Yosef, like, when he's in the pit, like, also. Like, he's in the pit, and, like, he's like, what am I doing here?
This
and
is Yosef saying, what am I here,
like,
you're thinking?
I'm thinking
you're
that, like,
you're so nearly right, Meg.
It's what
they
call
this. Look what I hit here.
Is it Uben or Yehuda, which is not better than
There you go, right? Pinchas is spot on. So, again, probably one between two for now, okay? I've got at least four connections between this story and Yosef. Okay? So the first one, while the sheet's being passed around, the first ones we've basically just said.
V'yikachuhu v'yishlechuhu oto habora v'habor rek en bomayim.
The brothers took Yosef, they threw him into the pit. The pit was empty, it had no water in it. Only had scorpions and snakes, if you're familiar with the Gemara.
Right.
Of course, Rashi, based on the Gemara. And once again, the next verse is he's pulled out of the pit, even once in Egypt. Here is the piece that I thought Megan had. This is as clear as it possibly could be. Maybe this is the best proof. Ar Mizmor says, Pasuk Yud, verse 10, Ma betza badami, what role does my blood have? Beridati al shachar, what value is my life if I go down to the grave? The only other place in all of Tanakh when those words, Ma betza dam, what value is my blood, appears, is in Bereshit, chapter 37, the words of Yehuda, the third source down, on the new sheet, Vayomer Yehuda elechav, and Yehuda says to his brothers, Ma betza, what benefit do we get? Ki neharog et achinu, if we kill our brother, vechisinu et damo, and we cover his blood. Ma betza badami, ma betza badami, as clear as could be. A further one, Sheol, right? Hi, what was the phrase? In the Mizmor? He'elita min Sheol nafshi. Pinchas' translation of the netherworld, you took me out of the netherworld, the underworld of my soul. Sheol is not a word that appears very often in Tanakh. I think it appears 15 times, according to my Bar Ilan search. Of those 15 times, something like 9 of them are said by Yaakov. Yaakov loves the word Sheol. Yaakov is somebody who thinks a lot about Sheol. Sorry? Yeah, Yaakov is speaking to somebody here about this the other day. Yaakov does not have a happy life. He certainly doesn't see his life optimistically. Here's one thing that he says, the fourth one down. Vayakumu kol banav v'chol benotav, all of his children and sons and daughters, get up l'nachamo, this is after Yosef has apparently been torn apart by a wild beast. Vayima'en l'hitnachem, he refuses to be comforted. Vayomer, and he says, Ki ered el beni avel, I'll go down mourning for my son Sheola, down to Sheol. Later on, when the brothers want to take Binyamin down, he refuses, because if Karelo Ason, a tragedy will occur on the way, Vahoridatam et sevati v'yogon Sheola, you'll take me down to Sheol. Three parallels sat now so far. Bor, the pit, Ma betza bedami, what is the role of my blood, number two. Number three, Sheol. Here is the most playful one. I only got this last year. This teacher of mine suggested when I was sharing with him a better idea, but it's beautiful. Anyone got the final one? Might be more than this, but this is the final one that I've got. Another just very clear linguistic word connection between the Mizmor and the Yosef story. Saki meaning what? And add one more word. No, as in right there. Pitachta saki. Right, Pasuk Yud Bet, verse 12 in the Mizmor is Pitachta saki, you. Three translators, you took off my sackcloth, but Pitachta literally means Poteach, you opened, right? Here's a verse, Bereshit chapter 42, the last one in the first section. They're on the way back to Israel, to Canaan, after having seen the man they don't know is Yosef. Vayiftehu ha'echad et sako, and one of them opened up his sack, and what did he find? So Bar Ilan allows me to. People know here what Bar Ilan is, not the university, the computer program. It's a computer program. It's also online digitalization of all Jewish text, so it allows me to have fun searching for everything and say things which make me sound like I'm really intelligent, but really they take 2 seconds just to find. The only two times in which the words the pei, taf, chet, poteach, and sak appear in proximity to one another are these two cases. Pitach tasaki, you took off my sackcloth. The other one opens up his sack. Four extremely clear parallels between this one short mizmor, only 13 verses, and the story of Yosef. Maybe more.
Interesting.
that this sake is.
Right.
That's been version of it. Yeah, fair. Yaakov says I'm now going to wear sackcloth on account of it. Very good. So, what's happening? Why all these references? What connection does this have to the Yosef story? So, very good, right? Let's see, that's the simplest thing to say. Hanukkah and Yosef always coincide with one another. My great teacher, Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, wrote a book that came out this year on the Haftarot and trying to look at the connection between the Haftarah and the Parasha. One thing that he discovered is that we read the Haftarah for Miketz only once every 19 years, right? Because 18 out of 19 years, Hanukkah falls on Parashat Miketz, and so it's always at these times. So, quite right, Jessamyn, chronologically it falls at this time. Is there anything we can find to connect it to the story itself? So here's my suggestion. Yosef arrives in Egypt. Now we think of it as a tragedy, right? He's sold by his brothers, how must he be feeling? I'm assuming he was also feeling pretty emotionally cut up, but I think there's also something else going on there. Right, you know, like the classic you know, film of the kid arriving in New York from some backwater wherever in Europe or the Far East, and he gets off the boat and he looks up at the Statue of Liberty and he looks up at the Empire State Building. He's like, yeah, I finally made it. I'm going to make this mine, right? And you've got Jay-Z playing in the background, right? I'm gonna own this place, right? Finally, Yosef has left this like dusty backwater in Canaan where he's just got to like be a shepherd and, like, you know, suffer his brother's jealousies. And he's finally arrived in the heart of the world superpower. And guess what? He's there in, like, a really great position in this powerful Egyptian's house. And we read the verses, the beginning of chapter 39, Perek Lamed Tet, and, like, he's just more and more successful. Everything he touches goes to gold. And he gets to put in charge of lots and lots more things. Here, let's just pick up the verses here. Towards the bottom of the page, the last full source. Vayazov. Okay. People often cry during my classes.
You know, Yosef just gets to me.
Right. V'ya'azov kol asher lo b'yad Yosef. Potiphar leaves everything he has in Yosef's hand. Somebody want to pass a tissue for Pinchas?
Yeah, please.
We can find time to talk afterwards.
It's so
fine, is there a tissue coming down? Rachel, on top of Kitvei HaRamban, you'll find tissues.
No, I got one.
Okay.
You
Ah, right. Right.
My eyes just started killing. I don't know what else.
Really?
Both Jake's lost
the cry. Yeah. Wow.
There's something in the air.
Oh, gosh. The Moroccan donuts have got onions.
I don't know what it is. No, yeah, no, we've both been having this entire time.
put your hands up if your eyes are okay. Wow, okay. All right. Gosh, all right. I'll speed this up so we can all get out to the fresh air of 6th Avenue. Thanks for being here, Rachel.
Done. Loving it.
V'yazov kol asher lo b'yad Yosef. Potiphar leaves everything he has in Yosef's hand. V'lo yadai tom u'ma, doesn't leave him anything kiim halechem except the bread asher hu achel, which he ate. Yosef is in charge of absolutely everything. And suddenly, at this point in the story, randomly, having already known Yosef for three whole chapters, what do we have? Vayehi Yosef yafet to'ar v'yafet mare. And Yosef was very beautiful. Good looking, good appearance. What is that doing there? Not only, I mean, physical descriptions are pretty rare in Tanakh, so they're always interesting when we get them, but we're also interested at the deployment of them. At what point are they located? Pinchas?
I mean, it seems like a precursor to the Asia Potiphar story.
So Pinchas gives the simplest explanation, that what's the very next verse? Vayehi achar hadvarim ha'ele, it was after these things. And his master's wife raises her eyes to him and she says, Shechvayimi, lie with me. So Pinchas is definitely correct. We're given the physical description of Yosef's beauty at this stage, causal connection to Aishat Potiphar's attraction to him. But I think there's also something else going on.
Maybe his haughtiness at that moment.
Absolutely, Becky. Spot on. It doesn't just go forward to Aishat Potiphar, it goes backwards to the description until now. He's arrived in New York. He's going up and up and up in the world, leaving behind Kanai's success, where everything he touches turns to gold. Look at Rashi. Over the page. Vayehi Yosef yafeh to'ar. Yosef is very beautiful. Kevan shera'a atzmo moshel. As he saw himself beginning to become powerful, hitchil ochel v'shotei, began to eat and drink. U'mesalsel b'sa'aro, and to curl his hair. Right? Mihar Raya from here, proof, curly hair is beautiful. Everyone wants to beautify themselves, has curly hair.
Draivka.
Yeah, you should see mine, Joe, before I cut it. Amar HaKadosh, right, it's a Joe thing, right, Yosef?
Yeah.
Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says, Avicha mitabel, your father is mourning over you. V'ata mesalsel b'sa'arecha, and you're curling your hair. You're preening yourself. Ani megare b'cha et hadov, I'm sending the bear against you, bit of a cruel nickname for her. Miyad v'kisai shekot adav. Immediately his master's wife raises her eyes, right? Aishat Potiphar, we don't even know her name, right? She's Potiphar's wife, she's the dove, she's the lechem, right? Yosef, in Rashi's reading, becoming more and more powerful. Everything he touches turning to gold. If I were just to sum up his situation in a line, what would it be? Va'ani amarti b'shalvi bal emot olam. And I said, in my tranquility, in my, let's use Jackie's translation, in my complacency, I will never fall. And guess what? He crashes. He goes down, once again, into literally the pit, Yarde Vor. And then he's raised up. And in that process, Yosef, when he returns, no longer sees himself as the sole author of his situation, as completely responsible for his own success. Every time from now on, Yosef will always ascribe whatever success, whatever skills he has, to that which is given him by Hashem. Paros says to him, wow, you're able to understand what my dreams are, you're able to see the future. What does he say? The next one on the sheet, Biladi Elokim Ya'aneh et Shalom Paro. It's not me speaking, I'm only able to do this through God. He'd never said that before. When he gives the names to his sons, saying, describing his strength or his misery, God is also there. Pinchas?
Can he also say it when he's in the pit, interpreting the
He says, "Ganov gunavti me'eretz Ha'Efrim." He admits his ethnic identity, which is very interesting.
No, I think he
God also. Oh, the skill of the dreams. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. He does there as well, and even from once he's down. But you didn't ever get that sense when you first met him.
He was a snotty kid.
Right. He was not a particularly attractive teenager.
Or he was.
And so, what I want to claim is that Ar Mizmor is actually a direct commentary on Yosef's life. This initial arrogance, complacency, which causes a fall, which is then restored when returned to Yosef understanding his skills, his great, great skills, in relationship to that which God has given him. And if it's true about Yosef as the individual, I think it's true about Yosef as the story of Yosef, these whole chapters as a whole. I'll just finish with this idea. Nechama Leibovitz has got a wonderful short essay called Ketzal Lilmod Perek B'Tanach. How to learn a chapter of Tanakh? And one of the skills, one of the tricks she gives us is to put our finger on a single word that repeats itself time and time again throughout a certain story and be able to follow it. So it's what's called, it was first pointed out by German scholars, Franz Rosenzweig and Martin Buber, and they called it the Leitwort. In Hebrew it's called Milat Mancha. I don't really have an English word for it. The leitmotif, it's a phrase that repeats itself time and time again.
Keyword.
What keyword? Thank you. One word that repeats itself time and time again in the Yosef story. Anybody? Like 15 times or so from the beginning to the end?
Yosef.
Yosef. Very, very good. Spot on. Shalach. Shin Lamad Chet. To send. Yaakov sends Yosef to see his brothers. They send him down into the pit, from which he is then sent to Egypt. He's then sent into prison again once there. Paro then sends for him one more time. Years later, Yaakov sends his other sons down to Egypt. Shalach, 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 shalach. It's a story of sending, but points out Nechama Leibovitz, it's a story of human sending. People sending other people. However, right at the end, there's a twist in the story. Yosef reveals himself. The brothers are shocked, probably terrified. Yosef says to them, don't worry. The final psukim on the source sheet, the ones which have got the red highlighted. Al tatzvu v'al yichar b'enichem, don't let this be bad in your eyes, ki machartem otihena, that you sold me here. Hine ki l'michyat shalchani Elohim lifneichem. God sent me in front of you, l'michyat, in order to find sustenance. Yosef puts his finger on the whole amazing irony of the story. What started as an act of the most terrible cruelty of selling a brother into slavery, paradoxically becomes the sole reason why the family is able to survive. Everyone ever got this irony before? Had the brothers not sold Yosef into slavery in Egypt, Yosef would not have risen to such a position of power in Egypt, and then would not have been in a position to save his whole family and the future of the Jewish people. That is the astonishing irony of the whole story. You thought you sold me, it's all right. It wasn't you sending me. L'michya shalchani Elohim, God sent me. Kizesh natayim harav, because the famine's already been hard now for 2 years. Bekerav ha'aretz. Od chamesh shanim, and we've got another 5 years. Asher ein charish v'katsir, without any crops. And then to make sure you've got the point, v'yishlacheini Elohim lifneichem. God sent me in front of you. Lasum lachem she'erit v'aretz, to find for you a foothold in the land. This whole tragic story, as it seemed from the outset, in which everybody misunderstands one another. Yaakov being kept in the dark, the brothers not having known what's happening, Yosef feeling so separate from everybody. Right now, everybody, even though it seemed like a story of humans sending one another, behind the curtain, to use the phrase, is actually God pulling the strings in some way. Here is this amazing midrash. Shmuel bar Nachman patach ki adati et machshavot. I know the thoughts concerning you, says Hashem. Shvatim hayu oskim b'michirato shel Yosef. The brothers were selling Yosef. V'Yakov haya osek b'sakko u'b'tanito. And Yaakov was sitting in sackcloth and mourning. V'Yehuda osek lakachat isha. Yehuda was looking to find a wife. V'Hakadosh Baruch Hu borei oro shel Melech HaMashiach. And God was creating the light of what would be the future redemption of Moshiach. In other words, behind this human story of intrigue, of tragedy, of misunderstanding, there is also another plan going on which we're not able to be aware of. But that even though we ourselves may be saying, Va'ani amalti b'shalvi, I am alone, nevertheless, Be'erev yalim bechi v'labokerina. Thank you very much, everybody. Churros, everyone.